And this morning we shant and your group and our guests. We are going to start. I think we have that you are here. Obviously you have heeded to our request to come and brief us on the your strategies and your control on the MCD, with the understanding that it's going to be a very important presentation, because remember that there is also a preparation for the sugar tax bill, which we were expected to contribute as the committee in that process. And for us, therefore, to be then able to contribute, it's going to be important that, among other things, we have a understanding and interact with the department. I think, honourable members, that is going to be our business for today. Having said that, in welcoming everybody, we've got two apologies. We've got a couple of apologies, in fact. Mr. Mabanga is requesting to leave early to prepare his debating in another committee. Dr. Thembe Kwayo is attending another meeting. Mr. Imam Sheikh is attending another meeting, also preparing for a debate. There's also an apology from the DG. As you know, when the department is called, the DG is part of that, leading that delegation. She is attending IOAC, which is Independent Oversight Advisory Committee, as the chair, which is in Geneva. So that's why she is not able to be with us. Those are the apologies for today. I'm off the Anders. I see there are new people here. We'll then follow the normal procedure of... introduction. I'm Lindiwe Thunjwa, I'm the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Health. On my left is Lucas Machalamba, who is the secretary for the committee. Honourable members will introduce themselves using the mic. After that, it will be the department and everybody who is a guest in the committee will use the mic. Over to you, honourable members. Oh, my apologies. I know there's something that is just disturbing me. I'll deal with it later. On my extreme left, thank you, Vyokas. On my extreme left is Moses, who is part of the research. Next to him is Lindo Kuhle, who is our conduct advisor. Is at the extreme next to the door is Mbari, who's our committee assistant. Yeah, I think Zubair was around. I don't see him now, but it's fine. Thank you very much. Over to you, honourable members.
Parliament. Mo tsabo pelo ke a leboga.
Good morning, my name is Fish Mahlalele, member of the committee.
Sanbona igama lami nguNonhlanhla Ncube Ndaba, oyilunga lale committee.
Good morning everyone, my name is Hlamala Mkhosa.
Good morning, my name is Mahlubanzi Mashafta, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lungiswa James, member of this committee.
Morning. I'm Donald Mapanga, an alternate member in this committee. Thank you.
Committee member Walmart James, good morning.
Honourable member next to Honourable James, introduce yourself using the mic. use the mic, press in front of you.
Igama lami ningumbulelo Nkonzo.
Thank you. In the secretariat, Zubair, who is the part of the researcher in the committee. Over to you, Ms. Hunt.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I am Jeanette Hunter. I'm the Deputy Director General for Primary Healthcare at the National Department of Health. My colleagues will introduce themselves, and when I do the introduction, I'll say more about them.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Sandhya Singh. I'm a director in the cluster non-communicable diseases.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Lynn Moeng Mashangu. I'm the chief director for health promotion, nutrition, and oral health.
Morning, Chair Frank Makua, parliamentary support officer of the minister.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Cindy Lesoldaza, in the Office of the Director General, National Department of Health.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Tarakas Kasama from the Office of the Deputy Minister.
There are ladies at the back. Can they introduce themselves?
My name is Jane from PMG.
Jane who?
Jane Diala from PMG.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Yuna van Sail from the Tobacco Institute.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Nolita Mazwai. I'm with Global Health Advocacy Incubator. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tamar Khan from Business Day and the Financial Mail.
Good morning. I'm Kerry Cullinan from Healthy News.
Thank you very much. We have also been joined by another member. Can she be assisted in using the mic and introducing herself?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Rachel Cecilia Adams from the Northern Cape. Thanks.
So thank you very much. For the benefit of other members, we have got two members who have joined us in the committee, Honorable Gonzo and Honorable Adams. They will, although they do serve in other committees, but we'll be seeing them from time to time. You are welcome, honorable members. Thank you. Over to you, Ms. Hunter.
I just want to use 1 minute to locate these two programs that you've asked us to report on within the National Department of Health. I manage the primary health care program. This program has 5 chief directors, the one being environmental health. Second one is the district health services system strengthening with the IU clinic resort. Under primary health care, we also manage all the communicable diseases except the HIV and TB. So we work very closely with program 3 managed by Dr. Pillay because he manages HIV and TB. We look after non-communicable diseases. And within non-communicable diseases, the priority diseases are those related to hypertension, diabetes, conditions affecting the respiratory tract, the health of the elderly, cancers, eye health, and then as well as mental health. Then we've got a chief director at health promotion, nutrition, and oral health. And needless to say, there's close cooperation between health promotion, nutrition and oral health and all other programs in the department, but especially with the non-communicable diseases chief directorate. That's why you would have seen previously with hearings on the sugar sweetened beverages tax a couple of months ago and yesterday, it would be Professor Freeman and Ms. Lin Mueng who has got here that addresses those meetings on behalf of the department. Prof. Freeman would also have been here today, but he's on leave, and this is why I've got Ms. Lin Mueng Matlangu, who will talk to the anti-obesity strategy after Ms. Singh has done a presentation on non-communicable diseases, because the anti-obesity strategy is a sub-program under our strategy for addressing non-communicable diseases. So over to you, Ms. Singh.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair, honourable members. It is my pleasure this morning to brief you on the strategic plan for the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases. And this strategy had a time period of 2013 to 2017. And in opening, I would like to make mention of the fact that NCDs constitute a significant health and developmental challenge. And it is important that the health system is responsible, is responsive to this massive challenge that is increasing at an alarming rate. Also in opening, I'd like to share with you some statistics around non-communicable diseases that will probably alert many of us to the magnitude of the problem, which unfortunately has been overlooked thus far. In terms of content, I would like to introduce you to non-communicable diseases in South Africa, both a health and developmental perspective. I want to then cover the implementation of the strategic plan for the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases. And with your permission, I will then thereafter refer to as NCDs. And you will notice that this implementation plan was for the period, or is presently coming to an end in 2017, and how this plan was responding to escalating disease. I would like to then cover some achievements and challenges and what is in place considering post-2017 once the end of this period approaches. What are the opportunities for us to implement a new policy? And in conclusion, I want to share with you the proposed new policy framework and what are our considerations in moving forward. So the picture around non-communicable diseases is growing at an alarming rate. And a study done by the Medical Research Council on the burden of disease in 2012 reveals some startling findings around NCDs. And from this figure, you will see that NCDs dominated the old age cause profile, accounting now for 64.9% of deaths in persons older than 45 years and older. And once again, I think it's very critical for us to note that 45 is not considered as part of the older person's component. And we've now got to look at what is the impact of premature mortality among our population, persons who are working, who are contributing to the economy and their families, and how does that impact on the quality of lives of the majority of our people. Linked to the study, we looked at deaths related to NCDs accounted for 24.2% among the top 10 leading causes of death. And immediately you will see that cerebrovascular diseases accounted for 7.5%. Similarly, high prevalence of ischemic heart disease, diabetes, hypertensive heart diseases. So essentially, we are now looking within the top 10 causes of death a significant presence of non-communicable diseases. But what has happened over the years? And this graph will tell us, will show you how from a period of 1997 to 2015, the pattern, and I want to alert you or direct you to the blue graph, And that will show you how non-communicable diseases was relatively high in the 1997 and then moved up to 2015. So we are looking at drastic changes in trends between communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases, and injuries. This gives you a very broad-based picture of where we are at the moment. And if you look immediately at 17.8% accounting for circulatory system diseases, and these include heart diseases, cerebrovascular disease, and hypertensive. Similarly, very high percentage of metabolic diseases, which include diabetes. So once again, this gives you an immediate picture of where or how do we compare NCD deaths related to other deaths. This perhaps has been the greatest eye-opener for us to look at how the trends have changed between 2014 and 2015. And while TB remains the top cause of death, look at the causes from 2014 to 15 relating to cerebrovascular deaths, diabetes, other forms of heart disease, hypertensive diseases, and respiratory diseases. And what I think what is very pertinent for us to recall right from the slides showing deaths is the causes of many of these diseases are preventable if we look at addressing the modifier risk behavior, but similarly improving the responsiveness of our health system to manage and control the diseases when diagnosed. This is just to share with you the differences between males and females. And in the males, in the top five causes, there are two NCDs and three communicable diseases. And in the top five causes, how relevant is this? For females, there are four of the five NCDs and one communicable disease. So when we talk about impact to loss of income, impact on the family, impact on the ability to earn an income, looking at how NCDs are related to the development of our people, of our communities, of our societies, we cannot overlook how premature mortality is impacting our younger people. And look at the development or the increase between 2010 and 2013. And this is where we've got to look at what are the best interventions moving forward. Because as I said previously, many of these are preventable. And how do we make sure the younger people are not affected or diagnosed with NCDs at this young age and become dependent on the state? What I'd like to do very briefly now is just share with you some figures around cancer incidence and also on hypertensive diseases. And this is cancer incidence figures from our National Cancer Registry, looking at a comparison between 2012 and 2006. The red bars are 2012 and the blue in 2006. And you will see breast cancer continues to increase. The incidence of breast cancer continues to increase, as well as cervical. But we got to note that cervical cancer is the biggest cause, is the biggest killer among our black women, especially poor black women. And this is something that we cannot take very lightly. Essentially, you will see an increase, except for esophageal cancer, which is reduced in 2012. Cancer incidence among males, prostate increasing hugely between 2012 and 2006, and similarly colorectal. And essentially among the top cancers among males, there's an increase between 2012 and 2006. So what is the situation around cancer in children? Between 800 and 1,000 children are estimated to be diagnosed with cancer annually. And brain tumors and leukemia comprise almost half of childhood cancers. And the reason that survival in South Africa is so poor at the moment as compared to developed countries is because in South Africa at present, we need to improve early diagnosis, correct diagnosis, and access to treatments. What is the trends around hypertension? And we know that this is contributing to our major causes of death in the country, both as a cause of death and a risk factor. And if you look at the South African Demographic Health Survey in 1998 and the NIDS study in 2008, drastic increases between men and women. So there is something that is not right. Some the interventions are not correctly addressed. We are not preventing NCDs that we could. Additionally, among those who are diagnosed, we're not managing and controlling them. But in addition to this, and we're all familiar with the quadruple burden of disease experienced by the people of our country, we've got to look at how NCDs is experienced as a comorbid condition. No longer do you see somebody walking in the street and says, I'm only a hypertensive or I'm only a diabetic. There are so many conditions that are occurring as comorbid conditions. Among people with HIV and AIDS, we are seeing cancer. We are seeing cardiovascular diseases. We are seeing stroke. We are seeing sensory disorders such as blindness and hearing impairment. Among those with TB, we are seeing diabetes, hearing loss, respiratory conditions, TB spine, which is irreversible. Maternal health. No longer can we only look at reducing maternal mortality. We've got to look at the quality of maternal health and what is the impact of hypertension, gestational diabetes, maternal nutrition, and why we need now to look at women and the health of women and their newborns from the point of gestation and not from the time of birth. Women's health, breast and cervical cancer are our biggest killers. Child health, diabetes type 1, cancers, cardiovascular diseases, epilepsy, and asthma. And across all these categories is the need for palliative care. So noting the extreme escalation in non-communicable diseases, we almost have to ask ourselves, why are we not being shocked by the fact that these figures are escalating in such a grave death? We've also got to look at how the escalation by impacting on premature mortality is impacting on development. And I think the NDP, which serves as our source document, makes a very, very pertinent statement in that South Africa's health challenges are more than medical. Behavior and lifestyles also contribute to ill health. To become a healthy nation, South Africans need to make informed decisions about what they eat, whether or not they consume alcohol, and their sexual behavior, among other factors. So essentially what we are seeing on the ground at the moment is a very, very tragic cycle between poverty, non-communicable diseases, many of which are preventable, and economic impact. And the economic impact means that our people who are already experiencing social determinants of health are remaining in cycles of poverty. So what did the strategic plan for the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases for the period 2013-17 was based on? And this was based on it was a national response to a global call. So South Africa was not the only country experiencing this extreme pandemic. Globally, we were experiencing it. And here was a call to implement multi-sectoral response, including the private sector and civil society, a call to reduce risk factors and create health-promoting environments, a call to strengthen national policies and health systems to ensure that for all of us diagnosed with an NCD, we were managed and controlled to prevent further complications. I did not want to be a diabetic who eventually died from an amputation from a diabetic foot. To increase research and development, and perhaps one of the areas, and you will see throughout the presentation, a concern around monitoring and evaluation, which remains problematic. And essentially the UN was saying to us, we had four priority NCDs: cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, cancer, and chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases and four common risk behaviors. And this was harmful use of alcohol, tobacco use, unhealthy diet, and physical inactivity. And how was a national response going to be designed based on the concept of best buys? So essentially, we were looking at the four risk behavior impacting, and you will see how they contribute to all four of the main priority NCDs. I apologize for the slide, and I'll go through it. Essentially, the UN put out to member states a concept of best buys, and this was based on what would be the cost of implementation, what would be the health impact, and was it cost-effectiveness or not. And if you look at the very cost-effective interventions that relate to tobacco use and issues around taxation and smoke-free environments, taxation on alcohol, reducing salt intake, food taxes, glycemic control among diabetics, hypertension drug treatment among cardiovascular diseases. With regard to cancer, it was treatment of first stage breast cancer and cervical screening. And one of the discussions that was extensive at that time looked at the HPV vaccine to prevent cervical cancer. And at that stage, the cost of the vaccine was far too excessive. While it was considered a best buy, it was also a consideration of cost. And South Africa is a non-Gavi eligible, so we do not get vaccines free. So it would appear that as the cost of the vaccine is reduced, it will be included in the best buys as well. So in this document, which is almost coming to an end at the end of this financial year, the vision was a long and healthy life for all through the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases. And this document contained a comprehensive approach to combating NCDs through three sub-strategies. And one was to look at, right at the outset, how do we prevent NCDs and promote health and wellness in line with the National Development Plan at population, community, and individual levels? How do we improve the control of NCDs through health system strengthening and reform? So once I am diagnosed, how do I make sure that I am controlled and don't develop further complications? And how do I monitor? How do we ensure that our interventions are appropriate? And you will find in your handouts as well as in the books, the plan that we circulated, the summit targets relate to issues around 25% of reduction of relative premature mortality, reducing tobacco use by 2020, reduce 20% the per capita consumption of alcohol, reduce the mean intake of salt, reduce by 10% the percentage of people who are obese, increase the prevalence of physical of activity, reduce the prevalence of people with raised blood pressure. And how do we do this? By comprehensive approaches, not necessarily only depending on medication. Every woman with sexually transmitted diseases to be screened for cervical cancer every 5 years, otherwise every woman to have 3 screens in a lifetime. And this now will be amended in line with the newly recently approved policy on cervical cancer. Increasing the percentage of people controlled for hypertension, diabetes, and asthma. And then, of course, increasing the number of people screened and treated for mental disorders. And I do apologize upfront that I am unable at this stage to comment on target number 10. So we have observed within this period of implementation both challenges and achievements. We believe that it was a learning curve, unfortunately, much to the expense of our people, because perhaps a lot more could have been done. However, we have to note the achievements, and I will come to some of the challenges further down. So essentially what emerged out of the strategy and what supported the strategy were various innovative policies and models of care. And perhaps one of the most innovative models presently is the integrated clinical service management model through which is being provided through the Ideal Clinic program. And this is very innovative because it recognizes that HIV is now a chronic disease, and we have many lessons to learn from the health system strengthening exercises of successful treatment of HIV. So essentially, it is talking to how do we rationalize clinical service delivery at a facility level to improve our outcomes. And we've, in this process, developed various tools, and one of the most integrated, innovative tools is the NCD strengthening in primary care adults, and maybe some of you may recognize this. It was the previous PC101, and I think in the Western Cape it's known as PAC. The development of a health promotion tool for primary care adults, NCD integration in adherence guidelines and loss to follow-up plan. These are all innovative strategies which were developed through health system strengthening from the HIV experience, and NCDs have now piggybacked on these. The training of PSC nurses on diabetes guidelines, and if we're talking continuum of care, we cannot forget rehabilitation and palliative care, and we are now implementing the strategic framework on disability and rehabilitation, which clearly makes mention of the need for rehabilitation by persons with NCDs, and we've just the National Health Council approved the National Framework and Policy, National Policy Framework and Strategy on Palliative Care. And this is palliative care across all programs and according to the WHO guideline, which talks to palliative care from the point of diagnosis and is not equitable, inclusive of, but not equitable to care of the dying. We've also had some successes around the compulsory registration on cancer, which has improved the reporting of the cancer registry. Many of you will observe and be aware that the department was severely criticized for not having updated data. And within a period of 5 years, we've had updated data spanning 1999. The cervical cancer screening is moving towards meeting its target, and the policies in breast and cervical were approved by the National Health Council. And perhaps what is considered best practice globally is the South African implementation of the HPV vaccine. And since 2014, approximately 1 million girls have been vaccinated against the cervical cancer. South Africa is also a leader in the regulation on the reduction of sodium content, and the dates for sodium reduction become effective 2016 and 2019. Yes, we now have to monitor this. And as you are aware, and I'm sure there have been various presentations, is the establishment and finalization of taxation on sugar-sweetened beverages and the National Health Commission, which is the equivalent of the HIV SANIC. South Africa is also considered best practice on tobacco control, and there are various laws and bills that are in process will be presented to the National Health Technical Committee in June, and taking forward the practices of tobacco control, especially in public areas. And with regard to harmful use of alcohol, the Department of Health plays a leading role together with the lead department, which is Trade and Industry, which coordinates the intergovernment policy regarding alcohol production, trade, and use. And at the moment, the Liquor Act is being reviewed to implement the policy changes. But yes, we've had many challenges. And perhaps one of the biggest challenges, which I stated right at the outset, relates to historically poor data around non-communicable diseases, which did not, unfortunately, benefit from the health system strengthening and major donor funding, which improved HIV reporting data collection to such a significant extent. So essentially, what the biggest challenge we had in measuring our performance in the strategy, which comes to an end in March next year, is were we able to measure achievement because of the lack of our initial baseline data. But it's a lesson we've learned, and now in moving forward to develop the new strategy or policy framework that we are proposing, the identification of baselines or estimate baselines will be critical. So we know that if we wanted to prevent 5 cases of hypertensive by 5 more, we will know where we started and where we're moving. Our prior document was a learning experience, and we believe that while many achievements were in place, this is something we experienced difficulty measuring. We also experienced difficulty also due to lack of previous priority. You will all hear the minister repeatedly mention NCDs now, so we are aware of our increasing priority. It's limited access to data collection tools, poor quality of data, and compromised access to collecting parameters. For example, what constitutes controlled hypertension? How many of us with hypertension know that we are controlled? We also observed that there was limited in the past demand for data. If a district manager didn't demand for data on how many people in that district were controlled, service providers didn't feel a need to provide it. And what we are experiencing now, that we are struggling a little bit to get it fully integrated into the HIV-related programs on adherence, on loss to follow-up plans, and CCMDD, because at the moment we are struggling, but improving our data collection. We've also had the extent of priority allocated to implementation varied. Some provinces did excellently. Western Cape, we've got pockets of excellence, which we are using to improve other areas. We also realize that it is not about a rural-urban divide anymore. There are pockets of excellence in the most rural disadvantaged Northern Cape, which provide excellent services, and we have many lessons to learn from that. The extent of coordination between prevention and control varied. However, what we do need to seek further support and guidance and perhaps interventions at high levels is how do we ensure buy-in from relevant stakeholders. We do engage very productively at the moment, and I believe that this can be improved, as well as integration with programs. So what happens at the end of the implementation of the strategy in March next year? We must learn from the lessons that this strategy has brought us. So there have been, we note achievements of linked policies and strategies, and they have been various. We need to obtain estimates of actual data and identify new sources of data, and we are very fortunate there are other sources of data. For example, the St. Haines, we now have the demographic health survey, we have research studies at universities. We've got to make sure we use credible, real data to inform baseline especially. And that is a very serious problem, because if we have to measure our achievement in the next 5 years, we know what has to be our starting point. We also need to be very, very clear that we're talking about continuum of care. And this NCD, prevention and control, cuts across from what happens in the home to the community, to societies, to all levels of care, going through right to the highest level of care, and that this must be an integrated approach. We have to focus on prevention, and we believe that prevention is considered the best buy, but let's not forget that there are many, many adults and children with diagnosed conditions who need to be managed. We cannot, our health system cannot afford the complications of having mismanaged diabetes, which lead to kidney dysfunctions. We have to consult relevant programs and stakeholders right from the beginning and essentially move towards an all-of-government, all-of-society commitment to the prevention and control of care. And so we are already engaging stakeholders, and we are moving according to a plan towards ensuring that we proceed with the new policy framework, whatever we decide to call it, and based on what we have learned. And we have many opportunities, and perhaps the biggest opportunity presented to this country is the fact that while NCDs was excluded in the Millennium Development Goals, we realize the importance of being included in the Sustainable Development Goals. And you all are aware that Goal 3.4 says by 2030, reduce by one-third premature mortality from NCDs through prevention and treatment, and promote mental health and well-being. And we cannot look at this goal in isolation. We've got to look at this goal together with the other goals of the SDGs. How do we address poverty? How do we address education of our women and our gender equality issues? How do we address environmental conditions? And yes, the emphasis of the SDGs position themselves fully into the opportunities we have at the moment in our country presented to us through the NHI, through the Ideal Clinic, through innovative models of care to reduce modifiable risk factors. And you have heard many, many engagements around, for example, reduced salt and the taxation on sugar-sweetened beverages. Health systems are essential, and unless we strengthen health systems to the extent that we did for HIV, we will not get the same outcomes. But I think we've got lessons to learn from that. How do we ensure that we have access to technologies, vaccines, and medicines? It is unacceptable that we go to clinics and they tell us that there are no strips and they can't look at diabetes control, for example. And the cost of vaccines obviously has to come down. And we are very pleased that one of the focus areas of the SDGs that will support us moving with the next policy framework will be surveillance. So in our endeavors, which have just started, Chair, I would like to just look at some of the principles of the proposed new policy framework in conclusion. And what we need to say is that this is an overarching policy framework on prevention and control of NCDs. And that is why it is very important for us to acknowledge the multi-program, multi-sectoral approach to developing this policy framework. It must be read together with other relevant strategies and implementation plans, for example, the obesity strategy, the health promotion strategy. What has come up as very urgent is in our prior initiative, what was missing was how do we manage and control NCDs to ensure there's adherence, there's compliance, there's loss to follow up, there's a continuity of care. How then do we proceed to get approval by March 2018 to involve all stakeholders? And perhaps the essential principle is that it is person-centered and not disease-centered. So we've got to look at basing the person is central to this new policy framework because we cannot ignore the social determinants of health. We cannot base this policy framework along disease. We've got to base it on where this person lives, what they eat, what access do they have to serve essential services. And how do we then ensure that, yes, prevention is a best buy, but we've also got to manage those that are diagnosed and to optimize existing opportunities, for example, the Ideal Clinic NHI. And unless we get multi-sectoral engagement right and common understanding to establish and strengthen multi-sectoral policies, this policy framework will be very difficult to achieve. However, we are optimistic from the lessons we learned, and I think that that is the manner in which we go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Singh. I just wanted to ask, do we move straight into the next presentation, or are you going to pause for questions here?
Honourable members, should we move to the next presentation? Do we want to engage with this one? By the looks, I think you can move to the next presentation and then we'll have. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Mueng will do that one, and I think it's a good strategy because they are completely interrelated. I'm not self-praising our strategy. I mean, it's a good strategy of the committee to take both before questioning.
Good morning again, honourable members. I'll be presenting the strategy for the prevention and control of obesity, but I think most of the background information Ms. Singh has already laid, but I do need to indicate that, I mean, obesity is one of the key contributors or risk factors for NCDs. And South Africa is among the three overweight and obese countries in Africa. The top in SADC, and the top 10 in the world. And over the years, we have seen an increase in obesity and not a decrease. We haven't had in many countries lessons, I mean, where countries have reduced obesity, and we were hoping that we would be among the first. But we have seen that we have not achieved that with a recent report that was presented last week. Seemingly, women have increased from 65% of either being overweight or obesity to 70%, which is a very serious problem. I would just introduce by saying WHO recommends that governments should develop policies that would be able to create equitable, safe and sustainable environment to prevent obesity, which means we are requested and we have seen the need to develop a document that will guide us in terms of how we address obesity. And expert bodies have also recommended that all societal sectors should be involved in terms of addressing NCDs and obesities. It can't be a health issue alone. I'm going straight into the strategy because I think a lot of the background, even though it was mainly NCDs, but it relates a lot to obesity. We have the document in front of us. The presentation may not necessarily touch on everything because a lot is already in the strategy, but I will talk to I've already said it's a growing epidemic, and in the document we have the situation in South Africa, which also relates to the problems with children. I'll talk to the drivers of obesity. I'll talk to each of the goals and objectives that we have and the activities that we have planned for that. Now, if we go to the broad goals, this is just a demonstration of the need to address all causes of obesity. One is to make sure that we have a team, intersectoral team, that addresses the issues of obesity. And the second goal for us is to create an enabling environment that supports availability and access to healthy food choices in various settings, which is very critical. As much as we know physical activity and food or diet are the contributors, but diet is the major contributor in terms of how we look. And then increasing the percentage of the population that engages in physical activity,
supporting obesity prevention in early childhood, we're seeing an increase in obesity amongst children, so this has to be dealt with separately from how we address obesity amongst adults. The issues of education, communication, and to mobilize communities to address issues of obesity, and establishing a surveillance and monitoring system, and strengthening research in this area. When the strategy was developed, there were some research areas which we didn't have much information in South Africa, but in the few years that this has been established, and I think prompted by the sugar tax issue as well, more work has been done by various researchers. The strategy is aligned to the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases. This has already been highlighted, and the purpose being to implement a multi-sectoral approach to the prevention and control of obesity. And we need to note that the strategy is not addressing the issues of treatment of obesity, it's just prevention and control. The targets that were set were based on the targets that were set in the NCD strategy, which was developed 2 years before the obesity strategy. So as a country, we could not set different strategies because we are all trying to work together. And we did expect that there will be no increase by 2016. We're not expecting an increase by 2017, but seemingly there is that. But our target is to reduce 10% of obesity, both in children and in adults, by 2020. And obviously, if we all work together, it is achievable. And if we implement all the necessary interventions, it's possible for us to see a decrease. Now, I want to focus on this slide, which talks to the drivers of obesity. And it's addressed in four compartments, with poor diet being one of those. And poor diets could be an effect of the choices that we make as individuals. The cost of healthy foods versus the unhealthy and processed foods. Environmental influences, where everywhere where you turn, you are seeing there's an access to the unhealthy food products everywhere, more than where you can actually buy healthier products. The issue of socialization and culture, we are aware that in some cultures, being overweight and obese is good, and you're actually praised for gaining weight, and those are the issues that need to be addressed. The issues of portion sizes, both individual portion sizes and the upsizing that we get when you procure. There are many places, where you would find an advert that's written bottomless chips, bottomless Coke on certain days. And if you buy double of the certain amount, you actually pay less than when you buy a smaller portion. So those issues influence how we end up choosing food. The easily availability of ultra-processed foods. These are foods that are high in sugar, high in salt, high in fats, and which we find everywhere. It's very rare where people actually consume just products from the garden or a freshly slaughtered chicken. Most of these have additives, a lot of things that I have added. The purchasing power, some researches indicate that people buy what is cheap and they don't look at the health benefits thereof. So if you increase the price of something, you are discouraging people from procuring. And those are some of the plans, and in also in terms of the tax issues. These relate to the purchasing power. Then we need to get to the issues of insufficient physical activity. Our environment is not encouraging us to participate in physical, let alone going to the gym, just walking long distances. The issues of safety, the infrastructure, and there are also no community networks that promote physical activity. Although in the past year or so, we've actually seen a lot of community people participating in physical activity. The increased use of technology by our children, computer games, TV, sitting down most of the time, Then special, I mean, the also time special challenges, the issues of transport, work distance, these are all contributing to lack of physical activity. Then the issues of knowledge, insufficient access to appropriate information. In fact, we just realized as we are talking about issues of obesity that people don't know the amount of sugar or fat content or salt content in the products that they eat. And at times you assume that I've taken little, just one can of cold drink without understanding that some of those cans have up to 11 teaspoons of sugar in them. When WHO is saying for better health, you need to consume not more than 6 teaspoons a day in everything else. I mean, this includes sugar added and sugar from the beverages that we drink. Then, and the consequences of wrong eating or poor eating habits are poorly understood. One of the things that we also pick up is that if people look slim, they think they can eat anything, and yet there's a lot of hidden fats, which relates to metabolic syndrome, the hidden fat and its effect. Those issues are poorly understood. I have already mentioned the knowledge of energy content of food, high coverage of advertisements of unhealthy foods. This has to be controlled in one way or another. I was actually talking to someone about the advert which we had around December of a Santa Claus who was carrying Coke. And if Santa Claus is carrying Coke, it means they are encouraging our children to consume that, because Santa Claus is mainly admired by children. The early childhood feeding practices, these are very, we seldom look at them as contributing factors to obesity, but poor breastfeeding practices, what we introduce when we introduce food to our children, often it's the sweetened cereals, and our children get used to a sweet taste from an early age and they are hooked on that throughout. There's also increasing evidence that low birth weight babies end up being obese babies. So all those issues need to be addressed from pregnancy and throughout the early feeding practices. We also use food as parents. When a child is crying, you give sweets. When a child, so, you know, all those issues we as parents are contributing, and there's a lot we can do. One of the issues which are critical is also the relationship between what parents teach and what schools teach that needs to be aligned. Now, getting to the strategy itself, the first issue of identifying, I mean, we've already identified key stakeholders and we've addressed them and they aligned their responsibilities in the documents that who will be responsible for what. If you look at the strategy itself, our aim was to have all key ministers who are responsible or can contribute to sign as core supporters of the strategy, but we were only able to get about 3 or 4 of them to sign in, which means everyone needs to play a role. I also need to indicate that the department has an MOU with Department of Sports to address issues of physical activity. So in a way, we are trying to address, so the issue of identifying key stakeholders and also addressing what is it that each of the stakeholders can do. Then the second issue was the fiscal policies related to sugar sweetened beverages, but also with time. In fact, there's often a question, why targeting sugar sweetened beverages? There's increasing evidence that as much as sugar on its own contributes to obesity, but the liquid sugar is a priority area that needs to be focused on, and the volumes that are consumed of liquid sugar. Then gradually we can identify other areas. But the issues of fiscal policies, it's not just about tax, it's also about labeling regulations, it's also about marketing regulations that we are also working on. And the issue of development of norms and standards in terms of ultra-processed foods, we need to be providing guidance to industry to say you can't have yogurt that has, I mean, I don't know if you are aware that the small cartoon of yogurt that we consume has 2.5 teaspoons of sugar in it, the 100 ml one. So that kind of guidance in terms of saying how much sugar should be reduced in those products. And then it's also the number of beverages that adhere to certain standards. Now, if you look at this as well, we have engaged various government departments. In the strategy, actually, it has outlined most of these because the presentation was prepared earlier on. The strategy has covered your DTI, your treasury, and everyone. Then, establishment of... Going back, okay. The code, this issue of the code, ensuring that a code of pledge of advertising is developed and adhered to. It's something that we are working on, but we strongly feel that this has to be regulated. It can't just be left as a code for industry people to implement. Then also the issue of educational tools to address issues of labeling, what will work best, and also making sure that even low literacy, people with low literacy levels are able to interpret. So one of the proposals, we are now talking of various teaspoons of something. So if you write 30 grams, it's meaningless to a lot of people. We need to be saying, if it has 30 grams of sugar, what does it mean? It's about 7 to 8 teaspoons of sugar. So it means we need to see those teaspoons outside the containers. So this is where our regulations, labeling regulations, need to be amended. And then working with agriculture to make sure that we make healthier foods like your vegetables accessible. So if people have, so this is part of, this is all, some of the activities that are planned here are actually also incorporated in the National Nutrition Plan that is led by the presidency so that we can implement most of this at a higher level. The issue of communities, strengthening community partnerships with schools or other venues where people can go participate in physical activity. The issue of promoting healthy eating in different settings. We have divided settings into early development centers, schools, workplaces, and also making sure that the education at schools, the curriculum is also changed to address some of these issues. In the workplace, we have already started working with national government departments we've developed a guide as well for them to offer healthier options. We just haven't been to Parliament to try and introduce the healthier options, but we have been to the national government department. And then also incorporating issues of healthy eating within the wellness programs in various workplaces. Now, the issue of physical activity, we again engaged SALGA, we engaged Sports and Rec so that we can, I've already addressed it, so that we can encourage people to participate in physical activity. But there's also the issue of encouraging people to ride bicycles instead of using cars, going to work. We are still far from that, but it's something that in future we need to be working towards. The issue of establishing community-based physical activity groups, we have identified that some of those already exist, but they didn't have a nutrition component in it. So now we are trying to identify these groups and incorporate a nutrition component in the physical activity groups. And strengthening mass participation, this is led by Sports and Rec. And then the issue of transport, we again engaged the Department of Transport, and they have included some of these activities in their own plans. And some of this will not necessarily happen in 2017, but with time we hope to see a change in our transport system and how people use the public transport, and so that you can at least have some distance that you walk to a bus stop and also from the bus stop to your workplace instead of driving and parking next to your door. And then the issue of increasing physical activity in schools is also something that we are working with Department of Education as well to strengthen. Then the issues of support obesity prevention in children. Some of the activities that we have put, they were mainly based on the resources that we currently have. To say this is what we already have, these are systems that we already have in place, we just need to strengthen them to implement some of this, because the issues of obesity start in utero. We need to address feeding during, healthy weight gain of pregnant women during pregnancy and address the issues of feeding immediately after. So we have incorporated these, and also trying to use existing systems like your Mom Connect to communicate such messages. And then the ECD child guidelines, we have already developed this and working very closely with social development to implement the guidelines. The issues of complementary feeding, we have already addressed this in terms of early feeding practices. And we also identified that in our growth monitoring, our focus was on underweight. So at the moment, the growth chart is being revised so that we can also address issues of overweight adequately when we monitor the growth of children. But it will also mean we need to build capacity of our health workers and our ECD practitioners so that they are able to monitor growth of children. The issue of communication, this is a major challenge because we do not have resources to implement a broad national communication plan. At the moment, we have some few messages, but there is a need for investment in this area. But the plan is to have, already we have some campaigns, some communication, but it is not enough in terms of changing behavior or influencing behavior. We have started having some community dialogues, but they are not adequate. We need more of these. The creation of a demand for we are hoping that educating our communities, they will then assist us in demanding healthier options, even in restaurants, because we are engaging restaurants in terms of what they can do. We are engaging the retailers in terms of what they can offer, but we also want consumers to make that demand. Then one of the areas is the increased access to health screening, knowing your numbers. At the moment, we have seen that people are not even aware when they are overweight because they don't know their weight status. And So the campaign to know your numbers, we have partnered with various sectors, your DISCAM, we have partnered with various sectors to try and assist us in this, but also as government, we are doing screening campaigns in various provinces just for people to get to know, and because if you know, you can start acting. We need to also have our health workers using monitoring of weight as one of the key activities within the health sector. But this diagram now shows us just the importance of having a multi-sectoral approach. And in the strategy, we have tried to cover all the various aspects. I realize that there's something which I had missed, but in terms of the retailers, we talked about upsizing, but there are a lot more that they can do. I'm sure you are aware that in some of the retailers, I think Woolworths has already started removing sweets from their aisles because this is part of our, yes, there are few that still have, but their target is to, yes, the last time they had said by June 2017, they would have removed from all their stores, but they were at almost 60% the last time they gave us the figures, because we just realized, but now at the moment we are trying to encourage all retailers to do that, because it can't be Woolworths alone that remove those sweets. This is just here indicating the various government departments and their roles and how they are supporting the strategy, and I think most of these we have already addressed in the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have realized that there was a little bit of an uproar when we talked about Woolworths.
From Woolworths.
Yes, we pass there every time. Sweets are still there, bare, naked in there. But thank you very much, because we then have to look into that. Honorable members, there is a presentation, which I think is a presentation that is really an eye-opener, which really is going to challenge us to lead by example, especially this committee. Any takers? I can see Honorable James, Honorable Ndaba, Honorable Khoza, Honorable Lungiswa James, Honorable Maisel, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for an extraordinary presentation. I can't think of another country that has our health burden. Perhaps Mexico might be a good comparison, but our infectious diseases are not burning out, and we have rising non-communicable diseases. And so the question is always, we shouldn't do what we did last year. We should budget for the health burden and not. And so there's a fundamental question about, I think, a mismatch in terms of priorities when it comes to primary health care. I mean, what we want to achieve is 90% coverage as the first line of treatment and diagnosis for the population, and we're not achieving that. We can do with more clinics in the country for sure, but that's not the major problem. The major problem is our clinics are underfunded and understaffed, and therefore the priority for the country would have to be that. And my view is that the budget does not reflect that. In fact, we don't even know how much we spend on primary health care. We know how much you spend on primary health care at the national government level, but we do not know what the provinces are doing. And so there is no data on the performance of the system when it comes to primary health care in the country. We don't have those numbers. And you have to get those numbers. And that means that we have to find out what the provinces are doing in terms of expenditure. So that's my first comment, and I'd like the DDG please to comment on that. We say we make it a primary health care as a priority. I don't think it is, if you look at the budget, and certainly not in terms of the performance that come out of that. Specifically, when it comes to the question of asking the question, what can government do in order to deal with this? The first is to provide the expertise and infrastructure for early and accurate diagnosis, and then to see whether the health system is primed with treatment to deal with those diseases. And among those, there has to be two priorities. Is what happens to mumps, given our maternal mortality rate and our question of maternal health. You know the maternal mortality rate is three times greater than what it should be and what it could be, and it's stubborn. It's staying that high. We know what the causes of death are. It's about hypertension, it's about HIV, and it's about obstetrics bleeding as a result of ambulances not turning up on time often. And that is utterly unacceptable. Those things can be dealt with by having a proper ambulance system. We don't have that in this country. Just try it. I once had an experience with bread, milk, and honey where somebody collapsed. I tried to get a public ambulance, and I couldn't. Just couldn't get it. And I said, well, then please send a private ambulance. And they said, please pay. The Constitution says nobody should be denied emergency treatment. So what happens to, this is appalling when it comes to maternal mortality. It should not happen. These are all preventable deaths. But that's the first priority. The second one is about children. So there's a whole lot of things we need to do, but those must prioritize, and I also don't see this in the budget. So I'd like you to comment on that. When it comes to data, we don't have surveillance data in this country. We just don't. We're going to have the new Public Health Institute created. The Cancer Registry is coming. But believe me, ICD-10 would not have happened if this country had a proper reporting system around deaths. And if the minister learned from Section 27, for goodness sake, The government of Gauteng did not inform him. It's a major failure in intergovernmental relations and reporting. But the fact is, any Ministry of Health must have a national surveillance system that works efficiently. And if it did, you would have picked up the deaths immediately, and we didn't. So when it comes to speaking about data, we actually need a proper health surveillance system at a national level. My final comment, two comments. Municipalities and cities must play a role in whatever strategy you have. You're working through COCTA. I don't think that's good enough. You have to work directly with cities. Cities are constitutionally responsible for the social determinants of health. That's food inspections at restaurants, that's rodent control, that's making sure that there's clean water and proper sanitation and so on. And cities should also be involved in the building of gyms for people who can't afford it. Okay, all of us can join Virgin. That's great. What does a poor person do? They need safe spaces in order to in fact, have gyms. And government can't provide that. That's not their business. But there are some private sector companies that can be subsidized to do it. So, and the role of municipalities in other parts of the world, it's a public responsibility that they have, is to provide exercise opportunities for people who cannot normally afford it. And I want you to look at that. And just finally about the food that is available at schools. Government controls schools, right? Go into some schools and you find a vending machine dispensing Coke, advertised as well. I have a hard view on that. I think in the U.S. they asked the Beverage Association to take it out, and there's sort of compliance around that. I don't think it should be possible. Just remove the vending machines and serve quality drinks to kids. What kind of food is being served to kids? They can buy chips, you know. So what happens in schools is a space over which government, in fact, has some control. So I think that our policy on that score is actually quite weak and quite limp, and I think we should look at that very carefully. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Honorable Ndaba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I want to welcome the presentation by the department. This is a good presentation, which I think, Chair, I personally still need much time to read it on my own and digest on some of the things. But I think when looking at the insufficient physical activity, you know, I was thinking, Chairperson, one time when I was still at the Gauteng legislature, we did an over, what do you call it, where you go overseas with the portfolio committee. We went to Cameroon, study tour. We went to Cameroon. And in Cameroon, they are practicing this. There are days where they do exercises. Everybody, from children, adults and the aged, you'll see them walking on the street. And when it's when coming to sports, it's a culture. Sports is a culture in Cameroon. And the way they do sports, I think these are some of the things that we need to look at, Che, if we want to promote physical activity. Because here in South Africa, you know, it's like, it's not even it's like a hobby, you know. But if maybe we can have a policy or a legislation where everybody is obliged. In Cameroon, that's what they are doing. Everybody. Mondays, they said Mondays, Wednesday, and Friday. Even at school and universities, they are practicing it. And I think this is one of the best model that you can use, and maybe you can go there and learn what they are doing, so that at least when you come back and you do interdepartmental relations, you know, some of these things you can come up with and try and introduce them. Even if you are saying small children starting from Emma Crash, yeah, starting from my crash, e-health department must be serious in doing inspections in those ECDs and check what are these children doing. What are these children eating? What are, besides learning, what are the activities that they are doing there? And maybe, and try and advise, whether it's Department of Basic Education or whatever, but come with a standard practice on what needs to happen from ECDs, high schools, and up until universities, yeah, I'm sure. Even in promoting e-healthy lifestyle to the aged, they must not just go and get mukholo wabo and not do anything. There's no activity. They are sitting at home. After getting their pension, they go home and sit without any activity. I think if we are serious, maybe let's think along those sides on how then can we improve on such things. But I think the other thing, Chair, that I'm worried of is the issue of sugar tax. I'm not against sugar tax, but my worry is that we are concentrating on the liquid sugar. But, you know, the reality is that when you eat Special K, there's a lot of sugar. I don't know how do you make your priorities, because when you want to eliminate into your sugar, we must look at all these things holistically and not target one thing. You know, to me, it's like, you know, sometimes somewhere these business people are fighting, so somebody want to score points and so on. But Mina, in reality, is that in my Special K, even today, you can go and buy them. There's a lot of sugar in my Special K. Why are not attending to those ones? Why are not dealing with those ones? You said the power of purchase. Ne? And you are saying most of the people in South Africa are poor. And they buy what is cheap. And there are these frozen chickens, which has a salt, high salt. Ne? Those people, they use high salt to preserve the chickens. Ne? But it's not healthy for our people. And our people are eating that every day. What are you saying about that one? Because it's a killer. You see, most of the people, me and myself, in fact, I realized one day when I eat these bread packs, you know, and my high blood pressure will just go up. And then I said, hey, man, every time when I eat bread pack, my blood pressure just goes shh. And I decided, no, I'm no longer eating this chicken. And I said, no, let me start eating our home chicken, you know, the one that we slaughter at home. And that thing disappeared. I don't have that problem anymore. So all what I want us to do, if you want to deal with these things, let's deal with them holistically. And not just in piecemeal, because it's like other people are being targeted. And other people who are killing our people, they are not being targeted. We are leaving them to get away with the murder. So when let's deal with all of them. I think this one of ETV, especially for our children, that one is worse. You know, every day at home, when I'm at home, my son is not going to play outside. He's having that TV game thing, sitting there playing that thing for the whole day. Sometimes I fight with him and know he will go to the kitchen and eat and come back and sit there and play that thing for the whole day. And you know, sometimes I hate myself. I say, maybe I shouldn't have bought my son that thing. I don't know what must we do with our children. Because, seriously, this is the problem. I think we need to do something. Well, you know, there are things that we can be able to control. There are things that we cannot be able to control. Like, for instance, the restaurants. Kids like chips. even ourselves, you know, here can few honourable members who don't eat chips, people who are health conscious like Honourable Fish Matalel. But most of us, of course, are about after we eat those junk. We go to Nando's, ne? We go to Nando's, and we think the grilled chicken is the best, ne? But they have chips and sauce and what and what and what, tomato sauce and so on. And tomato sauce has a lot of sugar. Why don't you identify also tomato sauce as another contributory factor to obesity? Because everybody, even the children, they put tomato sauce every day and they think it's nice, ne? But there's a lot of sugar. You know, even today I'm happy that you said these yogurts have got 2 teaspoons of sugar. And Gamampela, it's true. You know, this yogurt, when you eat it, sometimes I can't even eat it because the sugar is too much there. You know what I've done? I changed. I'm no longer eating the usual sugar. I buy fructose, but I'm not even sure whether that fructose sugar is healthy or not. So I think you must unpack these things for us so that we can know exactly what is what. So that you cannot come here and say, hey, no, you want to end our people's jobs because the sugarcane farms are being owned by our people and so on and so on and so on. When you've got those chickens as the salt and you're quiet about them, you're not saying anything, Mina, I will support anything when you say, even those bribe packs, let's talk about them. We must not be quiet. Let's talk about those bribe packs. Let's talk about Tiger Brand. Let's talk about all these foods that are a contributory factor to obesity, and some of them, they are leading to high blood pressure. You know, these are all diseases that are a killer for us. And I'm sure, Chair, you're going to help us. I think your strategy is good, but I'm worried about the implementation of your strategy. You know, we can have all these things on paper, but in terms of implementation, I'm not sure, but how are you going to roll it out? What Honorable James was saying in terms of municipalities, I think it's important. Health education, we must start with the basics. Go to our communities and educate our communities on all these things. Because, you know, if we are going to have a strategy that is there, it's high-level strategy, but not able to implement what we have crafted, then we are going to have a problem. So I think it's important that you also involve the other departments about basic education, whether it's basic education, social development, and also tell us, on if you are saying our people like buying what is cheap, how are we going to advise our people not to buy those bribe packs because they don't have money? That's another challenge. If we are saying you're working with Department of Agriculture, we are going to promote maybe in terms of chala song, you know? But how are we going to coordinate those things? I think these are some of the things that we need to think of so that we cannot talk about these things and saying we are working with the Department of Agriculture, but in terms of coordination, because the challenge that we're having, it's a lack of coordination within the departments. So I think I can stop there, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Khoza.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Much, Chairperson, has been said, but I still have something to contribute. Number one is that in a packet of cigarette, it is written that cigarette smoking is dangerous. It is written. But at Nando's, KFC, and McDonald's, nothing is indicating that those foodstuffs that are there are no good. Sometimes one other thing I wanted to raise is that when giving examples, You need to be careful because you gave an example of Woolworths that is selling lots of sweetened foodstuff. Number two, it is a shop that is not easily accessible by the communities. In all the villages, when you want to go to Woolworth, you drive more than 60 to 80 kilometers. It's not easy for the people to go there. The other issue I wanted to raise is that in our municipalities, we no longer have health inspectors who will be checking the spaza shops and our shops in the villages. I don't know if maybe you are in a way trying to reach out to such institutions to ensure that we have health inspectors to be checking those foodstuffs in spaza shop as well as the people that are selling for the children at schools, because all those are the things that are said to be no good, the chips and many other things. The last issue is with regard to physical education, to promote physical health. I don't know if maybe you have also tried to work with the Department of Education. You know, today we always talk learner transport. The children are no longer walking to school. They are dropped at the gate of the school and dropped at the gate at home to sit down and watch TV and play the TV game that the Honorable Ndaba is talking about. And what is happening at school, the physical education is not compulsory. And in every school, those that are participating in physical education are less than 10%, and that is only, it's seasonal when they do athletics and the like. And those that play soccer, netball, and rugby and the others, you know, they are just 2%. The rest are taken to the gate home and go and sleep. Thank you very much.
Honourable James.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation. Everything that's in this presentation, I wish it could be, you know, implemented with immediate effect. Because we've been speaking of prevention for a very long time, and also empowering our communities and our society on information, so that they can take responsibility of them. Nobody's going to look after a patient on a daily basis. They've got to know if they are hypertensive, how do they look after themselves, how do they take their medication, how all of that. So I really welcome this presentation, but I know there are a number of factors that will affect the implementation. One of them, how do we get the staff to do this kind of work? We all know that our facilities are not up to standard, where we can begin to implement what's in this presentation. And also making sure that you speak to more of the other departments, like your safety and security, because look, we drop the children in front of the school gate and back at home because of security. I wish I could walk in my community and do the walking in the evening. I cannot because it's unsafe. So a number of factors impact on the sitting. And I was saying to my colleague next to me, he was saying this presentation is specially made for me. And I said, I'm glad when you touched on the thin people that eat and forget that the hidden fat is there.
Yeah, my biggest problem is that now that this department, the Department of Health, has to now focus really on primary health care. This is primary health care. Now we're speaking of the people on the ground there, where they are. How do they manage the NCDs? How do they prevent NCDs? From knowing that a person who presents with ABC is a diabetic or so that they know these things, because the unfortunate is that our communities have no knowledge. They don't know. That is why we have this uncontrollable kind of NCDs that continue to grow, because people don't have no information. As long as they don't know. I'm glad also that now you are changing from 30 grams that I don't know sitting here what that means. For 2 teaspoons to 10 teaspoons, people know exactly. Must always remember it is the poor of the poorest. And we spoke of cancer, of cervical cancer, which affects the poor of the poorest, the black people. People, who tells them about them? I've never seen it even on TV. Just as something going on. It's so rare. It's hidden somewhere. We need, when you train your staff, have people that are going to educate our people. Make use of our community newspapers, which they get for free. They can sit down and read about. We've got to check themselves. Where do they go and check themselves? Is there access in the clinics? This is now talking about the primary health care level. This is now the people on the ground. This presentation is meant specifically for them. And I can tell you now today, I'm very proud of this presentation, but I'm just worried that how are we going to implement it? Looking at schools, how do we at the schools, the tuck shop, how do we work? How do we, I don't know how to say, but make sure that the people that sell in those tuck shops, I mean, even the private schools, they worse. They worse in the private schools, I can tell you now. They worse. They sell everything that shouldn't be in that tuck shop. But they're there, and I'm sitting here. My child is in that school. He buys I don't know, I want to mention the things that he eats from those schools. And they come back and they say, there's no more PT time too in those schools, even in our public schools. There's no PT time. Well, during our times, we used to drill. We used to go and do drill. We go out and drill. The PT time, we'll jump around, we'll be shown. That's not there anymore. So get your sister department, the schools, safety and security, all that, so that they come together. And I'm glad that you also have sports and rec. This is so, for the first time, I always moan about this. For the first time, I'm actually quite happy. But how do we get here? It's so important. That's what you must work on. Where are you going to get the budget of it? How are you going to do it? And how are you going to, because we don't have nurses now in the clinics. We are with the staff shortage. I've just been to Kanyakuti. There are no nurses there. It is sad, and the district is not assisting at all. And look, how do we get here? That's what you have to come back and tell us as a portfolio committee. How are you going to get, so that we can monitor? And I love the time frames we put. It's only 3 years. How are you going to get there? I don't know, but I wish this could happen as soon as yesterday. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Honourable Maisel.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, we can talk until the cows come home. Nice things, all very nice, all very scientific. But that's not taking us anywhere. We said that poverty is the biggest driver of ill health. Now we're talking about non-communicable diseases here. And we said there is a correlation between diet and non-communicable diseases. And diet is a function of poverty or whatever. If you are hungry or we call it lifestyle disease, okay? Lifestyle diseases. And because they are more prevalent in the low and middle income countries, right? Or economies, middle, and these are people who are not well-to-do. They are slaves to wages, and they buy junk food to make do. Right? We all know this. And the reason is simple. They don't have the means of production. And this is engineered by colonizers. or the former colonizers. They took in South Africa, the majority of the people don't have land, and we expect them to have miracles. No, we can talk, and of course we talk, there is no money. Where do we get money from? From tax? Who do we tax? Or where do we hope to get money from? Let's talk about basics and what do we do to cure these diseases. It's no use giving tablets and tablets because you are sick and you end up being killed by those tablets. And you can't prevent something if you don't have anything to prevent with. Okay. You see, obesity is caused by malnutrition, isn't it? It's a result of malnutrition. You have malnutrition because you can't afford good nutrition. You can't afford good nutrition because you don't have a land to grow good nutrition. You have to buy, and you have to buy. You can't buy because you have no job, no work. There is no employment. You are unemployed. So what are we talking about? That we must now go and get tons and tons of tablets and distribute them to. It's not going to work. Let's start with the root cause, poverty, and how do we try to ameliorate that? If we start there, then we can start saying, what would a nation be first instilling the children? Okay. Then because we'll be having the wherewithal. Just now there is something called National Nutrition Supplementary Program at school. It's a scandal. Okay? And it's supposed to be done by the Department of Health, but it's done by teachers, no? Department of Education. And they don't know. They are not nutritionists. They don't know what to do. And most of the time they give children pap and there's even Western junk food to a quarter. Okay. Now, I don't know whether you when you talk about wellness, you study in house. Right here. What wellness is there here? Right here. Is there any wellness? Except that maybe they've changed, they don't give pap anymore, no? They give this type of diet. No more pap. All right, fine. It's a good change. But when you live here, what do you do? No, we have to be very honest and say, where do we start to solve this problem? Because just now, you are talking about the preventative and curative side of medicine, but you don't talk about the economics. Okay? And without talking about the economics, you'll just be throwing whatever you have into a black hole. And that is a very dangerous situation we are having here. But maybe I don't like, we'll have some other time for me to talk about this. Today we came to talk about nice things, about non-communicable diseases, how they come about, how we can prevent them. We can talk to people at work, at school, at home. Children sit there and watch television. We must try to prevent. It's just too much. Now, a poor person hasn't got time for that. He just wants to survive, get something to eat and survive. All those things you are talking, they are for rich people, people who can afford to. If I'm hungry, you can't tell me that I must run a kilometer or half a kilometer, maybe a week. You can't tell me about those things. You tell me how to get a bowl of food. Where do they have a free kitchen, food kitchen? So let's say we are talking to the wrong, we are talking to the right people about wrong things, how to solve the problem. No, this is good, it's very nice, scientific, like I said, but we are talking to wrong people who won't be able to do it simply because they don't have the wherewithal, let alone their children. No, so. The rich who have medical aid and have all these things, they don't eat McDonald's, they don't eat Nando's, they don't know what it is. They actually say it's junk food. It's not us. To us, Any food is food, man. There is nothing called junk. Because you can't afford proper diet. Okay? You can't afford it. You want it, you can't afford it. It's not affordable. And it's not your fault. You are not employed, or you are low income, or even middle income is even worse, because they think they get themselves into high debt. And then they don't get paid, their house, their bond, their houses are taken, their cars are taken, their children are chased away from school, they commit suicide. That's why 90% of people who die from non-communicable diseases come from this category. It's not by chance, it's by design. So I don't want to blame anybody here, but it's just that let's sit down one day and talk about the real McCoy, the real stuff, not... because if we don't talk about the real stuff, we won't get to the roots of it. And if we don't get to the root, we can't cure it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think from my side, just to... First, I do welcome this report, this presentation, because it's a presentation that is, as the Department of Health, you are starting to say, together with us, in fact, because it can't be the baby of the Department of Health only. It is the baby of everybody, and West public representatives, that we are in a very serious situation, not because of our own making. And therefore, the broader ideological debate is going to be needed. Maybe it's to be led by this portfolio committee, together with the Department of Health, to say why are we in this situation in terms of the role of capital and this, that we will have. But now, as we speak, our people are perishing, and something is to be done. And that's why I do think that it's important that we welcome this. I just want to check, they are, if you, have you, because suicide development has got soup kitchens, it depends where. I know in PE there are about one or two, they are in nutrition, they called nutrition centers. Look, I belong to the old school of soup kitchen, nutrition centers. Have you ever gone there to check the quality of and the type of food that they are preparing? What is it? Two, which is quite very difficult, is going to, as other members have said, the high rate of unemployment, it's going up. It is going to be difficult, which you are supposed to do, to make an awareness. I'm going to make an example of a woman who wants to feed her children, who's baking fat cakes and fish, and using that oil more than twice is understatement, and knowing very well that cooking oil used twice is very toxic. But you can't go and say to that woman, use that oil once. What then, do you have some programs and strategies of empowering our people to understand? Again, it is not because a person can't find work but it is then maybe the responsibility of all of us, led by you, science and technology, in terms of the Medical Research Council, in terms of the research, to empower our people. Two, Honorable Ndaba has touched into that, but also vegetables that are sold, in these outlets, are there vegetables that are of good quality to be consumed by our people. So I'm raising this because it's a subject that at times we take for granted, but it's what makes us to be, and then the role of the Honorable Lungiswa James have raised something very profound. You say people are not being monitored in terms of tablets, but you know for a fact that Department of Health, in terms of its HR, is grossly understaffed. And there's no robot that is going to monitor. In health, in this sector, there are no robots, it's one bodies. When you look into all these programs, and knowing very well that we conduct oversight, and what we see outside there, it's not what is in this paper. So the question that says, how are you going? It's a good presentation, but the problem is in the implementation. Personally, I would have been comfortable, maybe that's not in how you report, that reflect that, yes, we have got ABCD, but there are areas where we're going to have challenges. We've got community health workers. Are they empowered to be able to empower our people? You have said something very profound, that primary health starts at home, starts in my kitchen. And ourselves here, what are we feeding our children with and our grandchildren when in their lunch boxes? So it may be something very, very, I don't want to say trivial or very simple, but that lunch box, is it not about time now that both basic education and health will sit down and say, as we are saying, there must be law that regulates what is in tuck shops, but we must also know what is in that lunch box. Is it chips, sweets, and what, which is supposed to be apples? I thought that what is really in the center is how then our communities are to be empowered. And you are very keen in ensuring that our people understand this, the usage of community radio stations, the usage of community community newspapers. The last, working together with the sports, sporting codes get their money from adverts that we know for a fact that they have got a problem. How are we going to manage this? How are we in sitting together, talking with the Department of Sports, which some of their products that they drink have also. So I'm trying to impress on you how complicated this subject of non-communicable disease, which we are to ensure that we make it, we simplify so that our people understand, starting with us as public representatives seated here in this room. Because when we go out here and eat, we pour raw salt, sit with them here. Parliament is trying to, but we pour raw salt. So I do think that it's going to be very, you have praised Woolworths. I bought a sausage. It was salty like you can. I wanted to take it back, but my family said, when are we going to eat if you're going to be up and down? But truly and honestly speaking, but it can't only be Woolworths, it must be Pick and Pay, it must be Shoprite, it must be Checkers, because all those sweets are there. But it goes beyond those. I do think that there are comments. There are some questions that have been answered. You will sort yourselves whilst we are just having a 10-minute break for tea, and then you come and respond. We are likely to have if possible, depending on your responses, we'll have another round. a round which I think now we will have to. Honorable Mahlale, myself, the meeting is still on. May we break for tea and we'll come back after 10 minutes. Must I wait for you, Ms. Mazwai, because we want to start. Don't do that, please. We're going to start now. You'll circulate that at the end of the meeting, please. Ms. Hunter?
So I'll start with the comments of the chairs working back to the comments and questions from the different members of the portfolio committee. Ms. Moeng will talk a bit more specifically about visits to the nutrition centres, as you've raised the chair, but to be not pedantic, I want to link this point to another point that came up about what is happening to health inspectors going to spaza shops and areas where food has been prepared to make sure that those environments are conducive for preparing food hygienically for human consumption. We still have environmental health officers with local government, and we work closely with them because we manage this program at a national level. But it's definitely not done to the degree that one would expect it, and it's not happening everywhere. And that relates to the budget that we have for the entire ambit of primary healthcare services, because primary healthcare services starts in the community, and in South Africa it's with environmental health officers, it's with the community health workers, and it's also with school health before it goes into the clinics. So it takes me to the point that was raised here by Honorable James about the fact that primary healthcare is the focal point for starting our NHI, but is it really properly resourced? It is not properly resourced at the moment, and we, as a program, together with the DG, we are working with our CFO, with the National Treasury and the Provincial Treasuries. Within Treasury itself, there's a lot of competition between departments for a bigger slice of the pie. So what our health colleagues in Treasury expect from us is to have very well-developed business cases so that we can show if the country invests in certain interventions like community health worker program, like the environmental health program, like school health, and everything else, that the country has to invest there to have better gains. And it's the better gains for them is always will we save more money. And with health, and we work with the universities to assist us because they are looking for a quantitative analysis in terms of what will it cost to implement the program, what will be the positive health impact to implement the program, and what will be the savings upstream. And for us, it is we are actually in a favorable position to do that with NCDs, to show how early intervention saves becoming chronic to be on expensive medications forever, how interventions like exercise and proper diet, not smoking, and not abusing alcohol, can save the country, because it doesn't matter, even if we think we are private citizens buying medicines privately, at some point government does subsidize what happens in health. So it's about medication, but it's also to prevent hospitalization. Just imagine if someone never develops diabetes because they eat right and they exercise. But say we miss out on that and they do develop diabetes, then we still have a chance at secondary prevention, prevent them from having complications like having to go to hospital for an amputation. So we are working with Treasury Chair and Honorable Members to, through these investment cases,
that we've developed for some programs and that we are still developing for some programs to ensure that we get a bigger slice, firstly for health, and then secondly a bigger slice for primary healthcare interventions. But I'd really like Ms. Moeng just to talk a bit more about the inspections because she's doing work at all levels, starting at the ECD centers. I must also say we are in complete agreement with the portfolio committee members. And it's always good to do something. It gives us that extra impetus when we know we see the things the same as the portfolio committee. So we appreciate that. You are saying our focus has to be with the kids. Like Sandhya has presented, it starts in utero with a pregnant woman. And ma'am, you were talking about the bad habit of adding salt. We do it as adults because we were taught to do it as children. And so if we can change that habit already with a pregnant woman, so the kid is not born with cravings for certain tastes and also have the right education for the children, we can win this. So I also think we are fortunate to have a portfolio committee who understands the multi-pronged, multi-dimensional dynamics of fighting non-communicable diseases and obesity. So I just want to say something about the Woolworths line. My colleagues have been very formal, both of them, presenting these presentations, I think without really sharing how they really work. Ms. Moeng next to me is a huge champion of intersectoral collaboration. Not only does she work constantly with other departments, and especially the Department of Agriculture, and I'm going to ask her to talk just a little bit more about that, but with private sector. So she started this crusade with Woolworths, with what we call the temptation lines. And I've also said to her, she knows exactly how many Woolworths there is in the country. She's been talking to them, and she knows at the last report, they've given her the outlets by name. That is now stopped. Because I also said to her, Lynn, I don't see it in the Woolworths that I go to. And this thing is taking too long because Woolworths had promised us, you know, it was reported on the radio. I drove home. I haven't listened to the TV, but that particular day, Woolworths reported on the radio that they're taking the lines away. And that report was based on her interactions, I can almost say fighting with them. And I said, they announced on the radio, but I don't see it, but she knows the stores, and she said to me, no, go to this store. What is their percentage now? 40. It's still low. They're going slowly, they're dragging their feet. And unfortunately, now that they're busy removing, other shops are also coming on board, so we'll have to have a holistic approach to this with the shops. She's also got a very close working relationship, I want to laugh because it's actually a fighting relationship with the fast food outlets, but I'll not elaborate on that. So as the National Department of Health Chair and honorable members, we realize that this thing cannot be fought one-dimensionally. It can't just be about regulation, so we do regulate. We've, for example, we've got the regulations in terms of smoking, clamping down on smoking on the country, and more recently, a path regulations on reduction of salt. And when Sandhya presented Ms. Singh, she had those two dates because we had, is it 2016 and 2019? So we had given them limits to come down to by 2016, and we do random testing as the Department of Health of the agreed foodstuffs. And by 2019, we expect them to go a bit even further with the reduction. And the issue with the salty chicken, so it's due to the brine, and Ms. Moeng will talk about her work with agriculture in terms of the brine. So it's and it's not just about chicken, but all these foods that's marinated or preserved in brine has got a very high salt content. So brine was one of the first food sources that we earmarked for reducing and salt. So it's regulation, it's education, but it's also trying to interfere with the, not interfere, to have interventions in the environment to be conducive to exercise. And one of the members that mentioned it,
But we'll have to also start bringing safety and security into the fold, because lack of exercise in South Africa does deal with people's perception of how safe they are to go out and walk or not. So if I can just move on. I'm also going to ask Ms. Moeng, as I've said, to talk more about the interventions at different levels. One of the members had said that we need to have a manual for standard practice at early childhood development centres. So I know they're busy now. We're taking it to the NHC for approval, the nutritional guidelines for ECD centres, and she's got the guidelines for the human being throughout the lifespan. And while they're working on ECD centres, they had started with adults through looking at our sister government departments to look at, to give them guidelines in terms of what must be served in the canteens at work. And Honourable Ndaba Ngube has asked us why only the liquid sugars, and she thinks we really need to look at everything holistically, but I think it's a matter of eating the elephant piece by piece in terms of having limited resources. But I'll certainly take this message back to the DG, and we can then see how we broaden this scope of wanting to regulate this area. So it's about eating the elephant piece by piece in terms of resources, but it's also you must pick your fights one by one, and as a health, we sometimes don't even have the luxury to pick them one by one, but it's to have a manageable scope of work to address within a given period. And like Lynn will confirm, research has confirmed that you can make a huge impact if you just start reducing the sugars in liquid, in beverages, for that matter. We are facing, the point that she's made about the yogurt shows that we're facing decades, if not centuries, of being conditioned to eat wrong. There's even been a crusade against fats and creams to the advantage of sugars, and this is why they'll gladly advertise that yogurt is fat-free or low-fat, but not talk about the copious amount of harmful sugar that's in something like a yogurt. Chair, the honourable members had also highlighted to say the plan is good, but what about the implementation? The implementation, and we agree, is what's going to make the difference. So this is there is a lot happening in terms of the implementation, and we work very closely with Program 3, the health programs managed by Dr. Jogan Pillay. In fact, jointly, we've now appointed an agency to put out health education materials for us on radio, on TV, on billboards. We're also working with some NGOs in this regard to get the education messages out and in all the languages of the country, and like Lynn said, to talk straightforward and easily understood language. But she knows I also say often that we are not yet visible enough. We have to become more visible. And this is why we definitely have to finish our investment case, to get the funding to become more visible and to run more programs for the different settings of the human being across the lifespan, starting from in utero to the older people. I'm sure the honourable members have noted, and Lynn has also said, that we try to get as many signatures of other ministers in other sectors to not just come and say to the world or to say we work intersectorally, but to get that commitment. But I'm so happy Beyond the signature, we even got the message of support from Minister Motshekga, because we feel that the basic education should be our strongest ally in this. And as she's also said, Lynn has led these consultations with other departments to also make sure it's not just in our strategy, but this what we're trying to achieve in terms of reducing non-communicable diseases and reducing obesity in the country is also in the strategy, because then they make a real commitment in that way. And it's also for this reason, Chair, that the National Department is driving the setup of the National Health Commission, so that it becomes a formal structure envisaged to be chaired by the Deputy President of the country that will drive the implementation of our non-communicable diseases and anti-obesity, prevention of obesity strategy, because it is so dependent on the social determinants of health. And most of these, like people having decent homes, like, and the members have brought it up, Chair, you've also said, how do you say to someone who has got no other resort, you cannot reuse oil? So the economic development and the creation of decent jobs in this country is going to be a huge determinant whether we win our war against NCDs and contributory factors like obesity. Chair, I think I have covered everything. I just want to say lastly about the budget. We will certainly be working with the CFO. We will certainly try to get provinces to be more specific about what they spend on primary health care to have a good baseline and to be able to get them to grow that budget, but also to be able to provide the evidence of growth for that budget. And the CFO, through his monthly forums, is working with all the provincial CFOs to be able to do that, to clean the system, the BAS system, so that we can really see what they spend on primary health care. We've already put this year, in discussions with all 9 provinces, a minimum of 35% on the district health system in terms of their budget, and so we'll continue that work. But I'd really just like Ms. Moeng to speak about a few specifics, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I will just address a few of the issues that were raised, but what came up very interesting was the issue of ideological debates. When you think of how we allow companies to come and invest in South Africa, in fact, somebody in one of these consultation meetings was saying most of the companies that have led made U.S. people to be obese are now coming down to South Africa, and we are allowing that to happen. So some of the policies that we are taking in various government departments may need to be reviewed for us to see how we address this. I always make an example with a KFC, which is at an entrance of one of the schools in Pretoria. So children start their breakfast in KFC before going to class. But the issue of regulating the brine issue in chicken, agriculture is working on this, and they've already published regulations that are reducing the brine, and their brine is also part of our salt regulations, which the DDG has highlighted. You also mentioned the issue of reformulation, one of the members of nutrition products. We are working with an organization called Consumer Goods Council, which is an alignment of various industry players, for them to start reformulating their products. And they have submitted proposals to the department in terms of how they will go about this. But the challenge is, because this is not regulated, the pace of delivery is very slow. We are already seeing in some sectors some products which have been reduced. I mean, yogurt already, in some of the companies, they've already reduced their yogurt, I mean their sugar. So there's quite a lot that is happening, but I guess unless we get reports from each of those companies to say these and these various organizations have already started, we may not be able to follow up on how many. And I think the challenge, because it's a voluntary act from their side. The issue of coordination, most of what we have in the obesity strategy, we try to incorporate this in the plan that is led by the presidency, the nutrition plan. And with that, we're trying to improve coordination so that all government departments could report in one area, and we are hoping that that will improve. And the focus is mainly on malnutrition and food security. And just to highlight that malnutrition means both over and under nutrition. And then one of the issues that was raised was the issue of school nutrition program. Initially, when the school nutrition program was moved to education, it was because the expected outcomes of the school nutrition programs, nutrition program was not nutritional outcomes. It was mainly to make sure that children who are hungry can be attentive and they can come to school because they have something to expect. It's only after a few years, I mean, when it was moved to education, now they start realizing that there's a need to strengthen the nutrition outcomes within the program. So we are working with them. The only major challenge, again, it's about implementation, because even if you have menus that we have set that are healthy, when you go down to the schools, they're not implementing those menus. So it's a monitoring aspect that needs to be strengthened. The quality of food in community nutrition centers, we haven't actually visited, but recently DSD invited us to come and guide them in terms of the menus in those community nutrition centers. So we're working very closely with DSD. Vegetables sold, are they healthy? Are they of good quality? I think one of the challenges is those vegetables that are sold in open spaces, because some of them are even cut in half and you lose some nutrients in the process. So I think the involvement of municipalities to establish centers or shelters where people can sell vegetables in a protected environment, and also establishment of local markets will improve the quality, but also the cost, because then they will be able to access vegetables in a local area. We welcome the proposal. I mean, that we need to be regulating what is sold jointly with education, what is sold in schools. One of the challenges that we have had in hearing with education is that what is sold in school is mainly controlled by the school governing bodies, which we somehow need to engage with them so that we can improve the situation. I think I have most of the issues were really strengthening how we need to implement the program. As Ms. Hunter has said, we have started the implementation, but we only implement with the limited resources that we have. So we are not able to achieve everything, but we are hoping that this area will be strengthened as well. We would also welcome if members could, when they meet with their constituencies, because then it increases our consultation with communities, that we can go and educate, because I think what we are doing may not be enough in reaching every community. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Hunter and your team. You I hope you understand that this presentation is not just for the sake of a presentation. We are looking into the sugar tax bill, which we are expected to in the public hearings to interact and to put our, which I think as the department you are also in that space. But apart from that, is that we are going to monitor, in particular, the processes that you have put around the issues of obesity, the whole program. Yes, we hear that you have got challenges of resources, which touches into implementation. But we'll have to, when you are to come back, because Honorable James raised something very important about the role of Honorable Wilma James, about the role of provinces. So it's really going to be very important that we have an understanding of what is happening in this, in that space. There's something that you always speak as talk to as the department, the issue of health inspectors. And we understand that also they're in that space of local government, but also, again, the Department of Health. How, because we don't want to just speak about, ask questions on issues that they end up here. Because it frustrates us. We go to conduct oversight, we see the opposite of what is being presented. And that's what is really frustrating. And we would appreciate if the department can be upfront in really saying, here we managed to do this, we didn't manage to do this, we visited these schools in this province, in this district, this is what we have picked up. As the chair of the committee, I think we must now be at that space, because we are really too, we can't be general anymore. Our kids, our people are perishing under with the non-communicable diseases, not because of their own making, but because of a number of factors. Honourable Maisela raised a very important issue which we must see as the committee when we can, the round table, the talking about without the space of being confined with portfolio committee time and systems, just to really talk, how best do we empower our people? How best do we empower our people to understand? When I was doing my lower primary, feeding scheme was there. We were having a pint of milk with two biscuits which were high in protein. Two biscuits. They were called what? Piots. We alternate that with two slices of bread with peanut butter, but ensuring that every day it's a pint of fresh milk or sour milk, let alone the fermentation or whatever. So I'm saying we will then really have to look into those, what is it that is then provided in the schools. But I want to make a humble suggestion that pilot in Gauteng, if you go to Tswane, which schools, if you go to the Eastern Cape, which district in the Eastern Cape, if you come here, which district, not Cape Town, in the Western Cape, because you will be in Cape, not PE as in PE, but there are peri-urban areas which are around, so that we are able, you will go into, so, because this thing of being general is quite a, we hope when you come back, you're going to be, really be specific and tell us that we have moved, we said we're here, we have moved from this place, from, I think it has been quite a very, and thank you very much for the documents. Honorable Ndaba said something very important, that he wants to have time and on her own to read this. And I think all of us will do that. We'll come back to you in areas where we think you have not responded adequately to our satisfaction. We will write. The only thing, I'm worried that the DG is not here, the only thing that frustrates us, we request information. You take your own time. We go to our constituencies. We want to respond on these things. We don't want this information for the sake of information, but we are to play an oversight role so that the accountability part by the department, we are able to be. We don't want to see things when they have broken down. No, no. We want, when we pick up that it is a challenge. So when we said we wanted information, please bring us that information. Questions will be sent to you. Respond to those questions so that members are really satisfied in saying they are asking questions, they are taken serious in and when they want written responses. We do hope that we will meet again on the 31st, jointly with the finance. There are going to be public hearings. That's my understanding. Nothing has changed for now. We'll meet there. We have got a responsibility of empowering those people to understand. It is not an easy process, but we'll have to lay bare the challenges of all these issues that we have raised. I want to, on behalf of the committee, I want to thank you very much, and we will meet on the 31st jointly with the Finance Committee. Thank you very much. Can members, as you believe in, if members can just remain behind for some few minutes. Thank you very much. I think that's it.